Yeah, I heard once this beautiful analogy, and it was counseling is about if you're driving a car, looking in the rearview mirror. And coaching is looking forward to where you want to go. That's in its simplest form. So coaching is about, what is it you want in life? Where do you want to go? What are your goals? What do you want to work on yourself?
Still here we are, as the ongoing dialogue with reality becomes more and more consuming, passionate, inviting. Welcome to the table. Welcome to the banquet. Welcome to the Free Radical podcast. And in this episode, I had the privilege, enormous privilege, of speaking with a wise elder, professional, mentor, coach, and I must add my own beloved coaching teacher, Lily Setu. So Lily Setu is a seasoned professional coach, mentor coach, and coaching supervisor with nearly 2 decades of experience. She has worked with a wide spectrum of clients, from executives to frontline managers across public, private, and nonprofit sectors around the world. Lily is known for her clarity, depth, and ethical rigor, as well as her ability to hold space for deep transformation. Pioneer in creating coaching cultures, Lily was invited in 2009 to develop and implement a comprehensive coaching program for the BS Public Service, serving over 36,000 employees. She co-founded the ICF-accredited Indigenous Coach Training Program in collaboration with the First Nations Health Authority and also directs her own coaching school, Eighth Element Coaching. Lily served on the International Coaching Federation's Independent Review Board and is recognized globally for her contributions in coaching ethics and supervision. In 2020, she received the EMCC International Award for Supervision and earlier the Royal Roads Award for Excellence in Coaching and Mentoring. Her clients consistently praise her for her deep listening, gentle strength, and capacity to evoke clarity, courage, and wise action. And I confirm all of those things in my 6 months experience by learning with her. So in today's episode, we share with Lily about what's coaching and all the skills that one can learn through coaching, like intentional presence, listening, empathy, the challenges of allowing other people to be empowered by themselves, by accompanying, by helping them to find their own answers, midwifing their own process of insight, unlearning how coaching can be seen as a contemplative practice that allows for, again, space, presence, attention, silence, the importance of creating sometimes necessarily uncomfortable, unsettling, but never unsafe spaces for people to gain insight and whatnot. So this is the Free Radical podcast. To support it, please subscribe to our channel by clicking on the bell. And if you feel inspired, called, nourished by the conversation, like it, share it, and drop on your comments to keep this conversation for what it is, an ongoing, endless dialogue with reality. So without further ado, dear brothers, sisters, here is Lily Setu. Thank you for coming, Lily, and welcome to our Free Radical podcast. It's my fortune and pleasure to have you here today.
I'm excited to be here, see what shows up.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the same, exactly. So generally, I like to reflect for a moment about how I came upon my guests in life, in the journey. And in your case, it was a little bit more than a half a year ago. I remember was in Puri in India, and I was having a call with Father Kashin, or Michael, as we know him as well. And I was already thinking about doing some learning and something related to whether psychology or how to hone my skills of mentoring and accompanying people. And a friend of mine in Argentina who did coaching training told me, knowing you, he's one of my best friends, knowing you, probably coaching will be something you will like. And then after a few weeks, I'm talking with Michael from India. Both of us were in India, in different places. And he says, I'm about to start a coaching course. And I've talked with a lady called Lily, and she's very interesting. Maybe you want to talk to her and again, the rest is history, as they say. So I called you and here we are, and you have been my mentor, teacher, coaching mentor and coaching teacher, as well as with Carol for 6 months. So very honored to have you here. So for those who are new to the coaching world, Lilian, of course, I don't want just to limit you to the word coaching, but we are somehow centering our conversation on this theme. So for those new to the coaching realm, how will you define coaching besides the official definition in your own words and experience?
Yes, we do have some official.
You can give the official definition also if you want, no problem. But well, I want to hear yours.
Yeah, it's more about supporting others in their growth and in their and getting through what's blocking them, getting in their way, and the possibilities of where they want to go. So that's how I see it. Before we go on, I wanted to ask you, was that true what your friend said from Argentina and Father Cassie and Michael?
Yeah, I mean, they really hit on the spot. They were very accurate. First of all, my friend Argentina, we've lived together in our spiritual community for more than 20 years. So he knows me pretty well. So it was very accurate. And yes, Michael's suggestion was the icing on that particular cake, so to say. So I'm really grateful and enriched by the whole experience. Yeah,
it kind of speaks to me about paying attention to energy and what wants to happen versus what we force to have happen in life.
Yeah.
So I was very pleased for you to come into the program and to learn the way you learn, and we had some joyous giggles too. So it was fun. It was hard work because it is quite a rigorous program, and we had some fun, didn't we? It was an amazing cohort. Shout out to the cohort.
And I really appreciate your point of paying attention to the synchronicity of it all, because it was really like that. I was having this need to learn something, to hone certain skills, but still in a very generic way. I was not like, I'll go here or there. So my friend suggested that from a very natural place. Then, of course, Michael's advice was very much in line with that. So that was enough synchronicity for me to pay serious attention to that. And then, of course, having my conversation with you was like basically like, okay, confirming that intuition. So yeah, not regretting a single moment that decision. So
beautiful.
Thank you and the whole cohort, as you say, wonderful group. So you gave this definition of coaching, and I can imagine some people in their minds still unaware of the full details of the coaching experience, somehow mixing in their minds coaching with therapy or consulting. So I don't know if you would like to briefly mention what's the difference, though. Of course, here we are not creating opposites one against the other. They can be complementary, and many do learn coaching to complement with their counseling, but which could be some of the basic differences between this.
Yeah, I heard once this beautiful analogy, and it was counseling is about if you're driving a car, looking in the rearview mirror. And coaching is looking forward to where you want to go. That's in its simplest form. So coaching is about, you know, what is it you want in life? Where do you want to go? What are your goals? What do you want to work on yourself? And the coach supports that throughout. Where counseling is, there's something where you might be stuck. There might be some trauma in your body that you need to potentially work through. And consulting is, I'm the expert. Here's what I think you should do, or here's what you need to do. So slightly different, and I think I see them as a Venn diagram as well, because some of the skills are interchangeable.
I'm also remembering one analogy someone gave, I don't recall whom actually, maybe you or maybe someone else, that therapy is like between therapy and coaching. Therapy is more like archaeology, and coaching is like architecture.
Beautiful.
Something like that, they say. So of course we are not against digging into something in the past that needs to be healed, but that may be getting in the way of moving forward. But yeah, coaching is very much potential oriented, I will say, right? Trying like to actualize the inviting the person to actualize their potential, right?
Yeah, and there's space for all of this.
Yeah.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Also, yeah, in connection to that, I recall not you, but one of the coaches that you invited to one of the classes, she said, I don't recall her name, you may recall her, said that coaching is not so much about empowering people, but empowering them, like facilitating their own power, their own potential. And you many times mentioned that the client, as we may refer to in the coaching session, has to remain wholesome, resourceful. So I don't know if you can share any thoughts in that connection.
Yeah, so when I talk with a potential client or potential person that wants to come to me for some coaching, you know, I need to be able to really see that person as whole, creative, and resourceful. They can figure it out for themselves. They just need someone to walk alongside them and notice things and ask questions and get curious about what's going on without trying to fix them or tell them what to do. Because I know as adults, many of us do not like it when people try and tell us what to do, right? So coaching is really a respectful way of, I'm going to stand beside you and I'm going to be your partner in all of this and I'm going to think alongside you and I'm going to hold some space for you to process what you want to process and think out loud on whatever it is you want to think about. That's my role as a coach. So it's slightly different from a sports coach, where it's like, here's how you hold the stick, here's how you hit the puck, here's how you hold the bat. So it's very much more directive because it's a skill-based coaching. Versus this is more of a development of, how do I want to be in the world? How do I want to look at things? What kind of assumptions am I holding or beliefs that are either supporting me or getting in my way of where I want to go and what I want to do?
And to be honest, on a personal note, one of the reasons that convinced me, like, yeah, I want to do that, and I became more and more convinced as the class went on, was in my particular role as a spiritual, if you want to use, director or mentor or something like that. I find that after having gone through some not so positive experiences with figures in leadership or authority position, I find so necessary, like, to be as a leader or as a guide or as a mentor, to be humbled and sober in not, again, trying to fix the person, trying to rescue the person, trying to tell the person what to do, having all the answers, going to that place of what I will call toxic certainty. And it's so easy. It's such a big temptation to do that. And so many, unfortunately, a lot of people in the name of spiritual guidance, without bad intention probably, but end up falling into that trap because it's so easy. And so many people may approach us for, just give me the magical answer, the magical formula, instead of, you can do it. You can do it. Now bring the power back to the person. So on a personal note, I felt that gave me lots of clarity and relief and inspiration in trying how to express my accompanying others in a way that gives them permission to think, feel for themselves, find their own solutions, and me being just a companion on the journey, basically. I'm recall of the, maybe you have heard about this system from Socrates called Maieutics. I've learned about that before. So I found it some interesting connection between coaching and that. Socrates used to, he used this expression of midwife, no, like midwifing ideas. Already latent within the student, that listening potential, rather than teaching by merely delivering content, so to say. So I'm curious, how do you see that? How do you see the parallel between this ancient approach and the methodology of coaching today?
Yeah, I think that coaching has a Socratic philosophy underlying it, right? Asking questions versus telling. Absolutely. And it's very, if you haven't experienced coaching, it's hard to describe the feeling of the empowerment, agency that you can feel when somebody doesn't try and tell you what to do. They just hold the space and ask you a few questions for you to ponder. And if you don't want to go to those questions, you don't even have to. You can go somewhere else, as you know, right? It's and then you, there's a sense of empowerment of, I can do this. I have agency. There's places where I have choice. I know where I have choice and where I don't have choice. You know, what's in my control? What's outside of my control? Where do I want to focus on? Because I read somewhere that we as humans spend about 80% of our time in areas that are out of our control. So what if we flip that? How would that feel like? And what would that offer you?
And thank you for bringing us back to the experiential side of coaching, which of course, until and unless you are in the arena, so to say, you may hear, people may hear us talking about it, but still you need to enter into the arena to taste what it means to be there. And from my personal experience, I've been witness, I'm still thinking about this midwifing analogy of Socrates, and somehow in coaching someone, I feel that I was midwifing, like not literally a baby, but a baby of clarity and insight coming from the other person's womb or heart and transformation. And witnessing that is kind of a little miracle, I would say. No, I can imagine like a midwife witnessing another baby coming out of the womb. And it's not her baby, but she's somehow facilitating the process of birth. So I've had some small glimpses of midwifing in coaching, and it's beautiful.
I wake up every morning going, I can't believe I get to do this and support people and see people shift their energy or their whole body and sit up straighter and their eyes get shiny. It's like, and on the side, they actually pay me for this. It's amazing.
On top of that, let's not say too loud because the universe may hear and sound. It's okay. Let's keep it.
It's all good. You know, we could use more coaches in the world, especially right now, and the challenges that people have, and just being able to support others in figuring out where they need to go and what they need to do and what's in their control and what side of their control. Like, I feel like we could use more coaches in this world.
I agree. And that makes me think about how much people needs to be heard, basically, and coaching in big part. Of course, coach may ask relevant questions, but big part of the coaching process is, as you've told me many times, sometimes in some sessions, you are 95% of the time listening with presence, without judging, but the person needs to unpack, needs to even sometimes a little bit cathartically, but needs to express themselves, but needs to feel I'm in a safe space, safe container, and I'm being received and listened without judgment. So that's so important, so powerful.
Yeah, you often hear as a coach, I have never had anyone listen to me the way I've been listened to. And also, it can be very therapeutic. It's not therapy, but it can be therapeutic to be able to say things that you've never said to anybody in your whole life because you don't think anyone would listen, or you don't think that you think they might judge you, or they might tell you you're wrong. Like, and so, just imagine that space where you can say anything out loud and not be judged, and just be accepted for who you are. And then figure out where you want to go and what do I need to let go of to get there? And what do I need to actually enable myself to do to get there?
For me, it's such a preliminary foundation that you need to be seen for who you are, to be heard, to be accepted for who you are. And that on that safe foundation, you can be free and you can explore and you can discover. And I'm thinking still, again, from the coaching side, there is this great, going back to the temptations of the coaching life, if we want to put it that way, resisting the impulse, as you and Carol taught us. Now we have to resist the impulse to give advice during coaching. And that's such a temptation, especially for guys like me who spend some time giving advice, and people get accustomed to receiving advice. So even when we know, when we think we know what's best, as I think you said in one of the classes, unlearn and sit on your hands and listen. That's interesting for me because I really appreciate unlearning as spiritual practice in itself. So,
well, it's interesting because you have no idea about my life, right? There's a context piece here. So your advice maybe works for you, but it definitely won't work for me, given the, you know, who I am as a person and as an individual and my experience and my culture and the country even I live in and my socioeconomic status. And like, I don't have the same experience.
Yeah. And even if I know all of that and I know you for 25 years, I still do not know you in so many ways. So, yeah, sorry.
Yeah, so really, and many of us get hired for our expertise. Mm-hmm. So we come in and we think, oh, this is, I just need to give you advice. And that's not what this is about. This is not about advice. This is not about expertise. It's about expertise in the process and how to hold space and how to structure a question that might be useful. And it's not always about questions. Sometimes it's silence is our most powerful ally in this journey. Just give somebody the space to let them think out loud and let go of the need to fix them. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And I joke around, as you know, did I talk? Maybe I haven't shared it in the class, but I call myself the lazy coach. The less I talk, the more I get paid, right? My job is to hold the space and to really listen. Mm. And every once in a while, like you said, 95% of the time, the client gets to do the talking. Mm. The power of that, just the thought that I will be able to talk without being interrupted. Mm-hmm. It's an amazing gift.
Yeah.
So one of the biggest challenges as a new coach is to sit on your hands and not give advice, right?
Yeah. And you mentioned this important word, silence, that of course it's a big part of my tradition and practice. In one of our main texts, the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, from all secret things, I am silence, like implying in silence, so much secrets are disclosed or revealed or discovered. Mm. But somehow I thought I knew about silence. Of course, on some level I did, but with my coaching training, it took it to a whole nother level in practical terms to witness, again, firsthand, the magic of silence, of holding. I mean, silence doesn't mean don't speak, so to say. Something is going on in silence. Something is, you're holding space, you're listening, you're accompanying. So it's not that you're not doing anything. And yeah, sometimes how silence is giving permission and inviting and allowing the other person to feel free to fully unpack, right? So it was powerful. Yeah, it was powerful. And how many times, and from the other side, because in our coaching training, not only me or us were coaching, but we were being coached as well. So in being coached, also how much the silence that the coach provided gave so much spaciousness and time to explore and to go deep into what we are feeling. And that's something also that I want to ask you regarding, because during coaching sessions, the coach is receiving an enormous amount of data. Right? Not only words, but tone, silence, body language, nonverbal cues of sorts. So I'm curious about, in your personal case as a coach, what helps you personally as a coach to stay fully present in that flood of content without getting overwhelmed, basically?
Yeah. A lot is going on. There's a lot of data. And sometimes I'll close my eyes. Mm-hmm. And I've learned to explain this to my clients or the people I'm working with, because once someone said to me, are you falling asleep? So now I explain it. I say, you might notice that I'm closing my eyes. It's not that I'm ignoring you. I'm going inside of myself to check on the data, because there's a lot of data, but what is useful to your client and what's my stuff? Because I might get triggered by something that is said or done, and that's my stuff that I need to go away and process. So how do I get myself back into the presence for this client that I'm working with and being with? And then what might be useful data for the person? And what I have been trained to know at a very deep level is my body knows. My body intercepts all the signals, and then it goes to my brain, and my brain interprets it, and sometimes it messes it up, right? So if I can tune into myself, we say it's, you know, myself is an instrument of what's the data coming into my body, and what is that telling me? Or sometimes I might, and sometimes I might notice it for the client to say, you know, I'm noticing something going on. Does that have relevance for you? And if it's useful, they'll use it. If they don't, we let it go. Mm-hmm. It doesn't seem to be what's useful right now. And so that's one of the other skills that we talked about in class is just noticing things without any attachment and see if it's relevant for the client. Because we are, as I said, picking up all this data. And the client is too, but the client is also focused on what's going on, talking it through. And we're kind of, I don't know if you remember, we call that global listening, being really attuned to what's going on around us.
Yeah. I remember something that in this regard, this personally helped me a lot. Once we did some session without the cameras, not to deny or cancel all the data that comes visually, but just concentrating on the voice, and you start to see things by just receiving the sound. So you access to something very invisible, if you will, and becomes very implicit, very explicit. Sorry. So that is very interesting.
Yeah, and language is part of it, right? Like, as we said, you know, language, words create worlds. And I have done some mentor coaching sessions where the coaching is in another language. Mm-hmm. And it's really interesting. I really encourage coaches and mentor coaches and coach trainers to experience this, where you're listening to a recording without words. Mm-hmm. So you're noticing the cadence, you're noticing the tone, you're noticing when, you know, the energy picks up maybe, or when it drops, you're noticing whether the language gets sharper or faster or slower. Like, there's a lot of things that you can notice without actually hearing the words. And then you layer on the transcript, which I used to do, is layer on the transcript, and it's like the interpretation transcript into English. And it's like, oh, that's what was going on there. Oh, I sensed something there. And now I can actually see the words of the angst. It's an amazing experience.
I'll try that one. Send me some coaching in Russian or something, please.
Unfortunately, English is my only language.
Right? Oh, okay, okay.
No but problem. I am learning French, so maybe someday it would be good enough to be in French. Okay. All right.
Yeah, and in that connection also, I recall you often emphasize, going back to the amount of data that there are, of course, in a coaching session, as a coach, they're endless. And of course, I'm saying as a coaching, but this goes beyond a formal coaching session and applies for me to any conversation, not only between humans, but even interaction with other species. There are endless details going on in the interaction. But you mentioned as coaches, going back to the coaching session, we are interested in the underlying story. So a few words of what you mean by the underlying story, which I think is a fascinating point to highlight.
Yeah, so the data might come in and you might think, okay, this is what they want to talk about. But is it really? What's really going on? What is the unmet need? What is the hunger for something different? So let me see an example. Somebody said to me, well, usually a complaint about somebody, right? So it's like, oh, my boss doesn't care about me and doesn't. So I can be at surface level and go, well, what do you want to do about that? Or might be more useful to the client or the person I'm coaching to say, well, what's important to you about that? What is it you really want out of this? What kind of relationship do you want with this person? So we talk a little bit about the iceberg, where there's some very surface things that we can talk about. And, you know, I can get somebody to, I want this goal and here's the steps to get there. But there's also like, what's going on underneath? You know, what are the assumptions I'm making? What are the belief systems I'm operating from? Do they still work? Is this what's going to serve me best? What are my values? What's my value system? Often when there's a conflict, there's a clash of a value system of two different value systems, right? There's something going on that's not working for me because of my values. And so maybe a coach can help me unpack, what are these values that are important to me? And what do I want to do about this? And do these, are these still my values? And am I willing to bend or float or move my values a little bit for this? These are the kind of things that we could look at. So when we talk about coaching, we're talking about the who of the person and their development and where they want to be in the world and how they want to show up in the world. And then we're also talking about the topic that they bring to the session. So it could be around time management. It could be around a career goal. It could be around a promotion. It could be around being a better parent or being a better friend or whatever it is. But then there's that also supporting them to develop the person as well, the who part.
Yeah, and again, I cannot avoid recalling personal experiences while coaching when the official theme to explore in the session was A, but the actual underlying reality was B, C, D. And throughout the session, this became apparent to them. And it was, again, a beautiful bearing witness to the midwifing again of some insight that the person realizes, oh, this was the actual thing. I don't know why, but I'm recalling this famous quote by Albert Einstein. He will say, like, if I have 60 minutes to solve a problem, I will spend 55 minutes trying to understand the problem, 5 minutes solving it. So sometimes in this coaching back and forth, it's an understanding of what's the actual thing we want to deal with. And as you mentioned to me many times, sometimes clients need most of the session to figure out what's the theme they want to explore.
What's the question? Yeah. What is it that are really, what's really behind what I'm saying out loud?
Yeah. Yeah. And question, you mentioned this word question, and coaching is so much around questions as well, right? Like learning to make relevant question. That's, for me, it's an art unto itself. Sometimes we take for granted, again, things like silence. We take for granted things like listening. We take for granted things like making a question. But there is an art to each one of those departments, and the more we become mindful of what it takes to hone that skill, and we do so, I mean, that really makes a change. So I'm more and more fascinated by this notion of questions, rather, because again, such a temptation to become an answering machine, literally people thinking you have the answer, this is my question, and instead of giving an answer, you give back another question that and stay with the question enough, and the question itself will flourish in the form of an answer, so to say. So
I'm curious, with your work that you do, how has coaching shifted how you show up for your constituents or your, I don't know what you call them?
Yeah. Well, to be honest, I've never been much of a person like of an authoritarian mood, like here I am and listen to me and I have, what's your question? This is the answer, conclusive. That's not me. Not to play humble.
Sound like you.
Not to play humble, and I'm dramatizing a little bit the character. but still, of course, there is there has been and still is the temptation of listening to someone and coming with ideas or thinking, oh, this is what's actually going on, and trying like to rescue, again, to play the rescuer, go into the drama triangle that you brought in our teaching. And of course, playing the rescuer is a toxic role, basically, right? We shift into so many others, like victim and perpetrator, as we talked. So going through the coaching experience, I will say, gave me more grounding in terms of sitting on my hands, being silent, and learning to, instead of giving insights or opinions or advice or answers, which sometimes, of course, there is place for that. I'm not saying that has disappeared totally, but getting more into questions and getting more into inviting the person to find their own answers and me accompanying them in that process. And so far, I've witnessed very interesting results with that in my community and accompanying people. And again, lots of empowerment. And that's something that protects me, so to say, as a mentor. So I do not need to be on the top of the pyramid and everyone is depending on the answers of the Swami, which, again, I never try to be there. But through the coaching experience, that becomes even more apparent for me. So, yeah, very grateful.
So it feels like coaching is aligned to being a Swami.
I will say so. Yes. I will say so. It felt very natural for me. It never felt to me as a like an artificial imposition, like, oh, I'm learning this stuff which gets in the way with my being a Swami or living the lifestyle. But for me, it was like just another language, another articulation to speak in a very precise, specific way about things that I was already doing in certain way from certain place, but this is so complementary, so enriching. So yeah, it never felt like a conflict of interest or anything.
Yeah. Makes my heart sing.
So Lily, speaking about heart and singing, somehow it's all related. So I'm thinking about your, speaking about making the implicit explicit, and again this presenting proper questions to bring persons to awareness of, oh, that was the underlying story. You have crafted a symbolic tool, if I may call it that way, that we all love, your magic box. Yes. So okay. And I personally love people like Carl Jung and archetypes and symbol and ritual, and how many times all of this helps to bring the what's in the unconscious to the conscious, what's implicit to the explicit. I don't know if you have your magic box nearby there. If
you're doing, I do.
A glimpse of that for those who are interested also. So what's the idea behind the magic box, if you can show some of the symbols, and how symbols, in your opinion, make, again, the invisible visible, the implicit explicit?
Yeah, so metaphors are a really powerful way to work with a client or another person in that often we take metaphors at surface value, right? It's like, I feel like a hamster running on a wheel. And we just, we assume that we know what they're talking about. And if we just hold curiosity a bit longer and say, well, tell me about the hamster and tell me about the wheel and what color is it and how fast are you going? The person can make some amazing links to what's going on in their life and become clearer. So it's that evoking awareness competence around, you know, what is going on. And sometimes metaphors feel like a safer place because we're talking about something rather than me. And so when I did my coach supervision training a number of years ago, I learned about metaphor magic box and how to support a coach to figure out what's going on for them. And so it's almost like projecting what's going on for you onto an object. So this is my magic box, and I have all these little, can you see them?
Yeah.
All these little trinkets.
Okay. Yeah.
And each box is different because I believe that the energy of the box will go to the right owner. And so when I'm working with a client, a coaching client or a coach that's getting stuck somewhere, I may ask them to use their little symbols and create something, you know, what's going on. And they will often unconsciously build some sort of picture with these symbols. And then we start unpacking it. It's like, okay, what have you built? What are you noticing? What patterns might be there? What items did you choose for certain parts of your story? What do they represent? And I never know what they're going to say. It's that magic of not knowing and holding that space to and being prepared to be surprised letting the client do the work around what does it mean? What does it mean? And so I must have used the magic box over 1,000 times in the last 12, 13, 14 years. And I teach courses in how to use it as well. And every time there's something unexpected that happens. And that's the magic. No idea where the client's going to go or the person's going to go.
Can you recall some specific example without entering into any private details of something that
absolutely.
Recall that happened and how the symbol, again, helps to evoke awareness?
Yeah. So when I first started playing with it and experimenting, I was supervising a coach And she was telling me about this client that was really, she didn't like the client. She saw his name on her calendar and she wanted to run away. And, you know, she was challenged with this client. So I said, would you like to try something different? And she said, sure. So I brought out my magic box and I said, choose something that represents you. Choose something to represent your client. Anybody else in this picture? So she did all of this stuff. And I had no idea what's going on in her head. And so I said, well, tell me about the item that you picked that represents your client. And she had picked a little stone. And I said, well, so she said, he's immovable. And he keeps harping on this. And it's like he wants a lot of attention. And then I said, tell me about the item that you chose for yourself. And she'd chosen a little motorcycle.
Okay.
And I said, what do you notice about the picture that you've drawn with the items? And she said, oh, the motorcycle's facing outwards. It's like I'm trying to run away from him. And I said, and what else is going on? And she stopped and she thought for about, I don't know, it must have been a minute. It was quite a good pause. And she said, oh, my goodness. He reminds me of my father. And my father's militaristic and he drives me crazy. And as soon as she said that, there was a release.
Yeah.
She said, okay, he's not my father. Right. And so she can see this client in a totally different light. It was just beautiful to watch. And so I've also trained like school counselors in how to use this for high school, where oftentimes, especially some of the boys, and I don't want to typecast, but they'll just grunt when you ask them about themselves, right? They don't. But if you ask them to pick a symbol that represents them in their future career or something, all of a sudden they're talking about that thing, so it feels a bit safer. So that's my magic box.
Thank you. Thanks for bringing it to the table.
Of course. Thanks for asking. I don't always think about it, but it's a tool.
That's beautiful. And the experience I had personally with that in our sessions and training was also very interesting as a coach and as a coachee to see, again, how symbol can evoke meaning, purpose, and content that was not in the evident plane, but it manifests in a very, I don't want to use the word mystical way, but it's there.
Magical way.
Yeah.
And, you know,
it's not rational, of course, but it's not irrational either.
No, and you can use pictures and sometimes I'll use music, you know, so like if I know my client or my person I'm working with is very musical and loves music, I might say, you know, what song does this remind you of? And all of a sudden that opens up all sorts of possibilities for them, or draw a picture of what's going on for you, or even taking some pictures and saying which picture reminds you of your scenario, and then let's unpack that.
As I recall, you also taught us like also space of being creative as a coach and developing different ways to help bring the, again, implicit to the explicit in whatever way it may work better. And one way that helped me a lot, as simple as that sounds, I recall you about not only the importance of pausing, of course, and silence, sitting in silence, listening, but also of asking, anything else?
What else? What else?
What else? What else? That was a highlight. Again, that was a very, again, things that you may take for granted, like asking what else. It doesn't sound like something very interesting, like, wow, this is such a fancy question. But you are digging, insisting in a gentle way, but inviting the person to, not insisting on the person, but inviting the person to further explore if there is anything else to explore. And that was a highlight for me, because I remember you, and you shared with me a video that you were asking to someone like, I think, four times, and anything else? What else? And every time you asked, the person had something else to discover and excavate. So that was very insightful. And I recall, and I laughed with you, maybe you recall that I had my own session and I did, okay, let's put this in practice. And I exercised the skill, hopefully naturally. And I ended up asking what else seven times. So I gained a new World Guinness records in the coaching world for what else? With all humility, of course.
Of course. I'm going to put that in my record book.
With your blessings, please. So, but yeah, that was a highlight for me.
And what came out of that session? Like, what did you learn from using what else seven times?
Well, one of the things is, again, as a coach, you may be a little concerned about, okay, well, since it's a lot about making the right question, you may become a little bit concerned about what's the next question to make. And you may be a little bit over concerned about having the next question well-crafted, being very relevant and accurate. And maybe the next question is the same question and the same question and the same question, which is what else? Because that's what the person needs. So it's not so much about you're crafting fancy questions, but being present to the necessity of the moment. And it may be just a gentle invitation for more in the deep, in the same direction, but deeper. And it's wonderful. It's wonderful.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
And that speaks to being present to what's going on instead of thinking, oh, what's the next question I should ask it? And what's that beautiful, perfect question? It's like right now, we just need to stop and go a little bit deeper.
Yeah.
What else?
Yeah.
And what else? And is there anything else?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And of course, sometimes they may say, as you say, no, there is nothing else and we can move forward. But again, I've seen in practice, at least most of the times, there's a few more times you can say what else and there will be something to be said.
Yeah. And sometimes I'll say, they'll say, no, oh, I don't have anything else. I'm like, come on, one more. But that's when I have a good relationship with the person that I can get away with it. Right?
That's a good one. And also that is teaching me and realizing now that, yeah, many times we humans may, not with any bad intention, but reply with something and we may not give the full picture of anything in our first reply. Like recently, I was also in an immense rites of passage, and part of the practice was like we were sitting and the question was, who are you? So each person was invited to reply in any way they wanted. And when the circle ended, you were again invited to reply, who are you, in yet another layer. And it's similar to this, anything else? Well, it's the same question. And we did the round like 4, 5, 6 times, and we were always excavating further layers of who am I. So that's, for me, speaks also sometimes in the first reply, we may be more formal or general or superficial or even sometimes evasive. And the more
we... I love it. It touches my soul.
So thank you for that. Yeah, anything else less? And that was a profound one. Yeah, and I will say it's beyond the coaching arena. It's with my own conversation with myself on a daily basis, like going deeper. And as you are saying, Lily, it's a lot about staying long enough time in the unknown and trusting that. And so I'm wondering, how do you as a coach navigate people, so to say, or navigate taking people or accompanying people to the edge of transformation while keeping them safe? No, because I remember in the course we was taught, it may feel unsettling, it may feel uncomfortable, but never unsafe. That's the idea, right? So how you navigate that, accompanying people to the edge of the liminal space, the transformation space, while keeping them safe?
A lot of it is about contracting, the agreement that we have and how we work together. So one of the first questions I will ask the person in getting to know them is, what do you need in order to feel safe enough to do the work that you need to do? So it's safe enough. It's not totally in comfort. We learn in discomfort, but there's also that going to the edge where it becomes unsafe. And then there is permission to stop the session at any time. Just to say, okay, I'm pausing here, or I need to leave, or I need to stop right now because I'm not feeling safe, or you don't even have to tell me it's unsafe. It's just saying, I need to pause now. That's enough for me. I don't need to know, right? Like, this has to be totally about what you need and where you're feeling safe and where you're not feeling safe. And so to me, coaching is a relational practice. It's really about context. It's about the person. It's about how they learn best, what keeps them safe. And I can't say I can make a safe space for you. I hear a lot of coaches say, yeah, I create a safe space for you. Well, I don't think so. I've experienced coaches that I worked with where they've said, this is a safe space, and then I don't feel safe.
Yeah.
Right? And you feel safe as long as you're feeling safe, and then until you don't. It could be anything that triggers me into an unsafe space.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if you have this kind of relationship with someone and they feel safe enough to say, okay, we need to pause here, and I don't have any judgment about that, it's like, that is totally okay.
Mm.
When you're ready to talk about it, if you ever are, I'm happy to be here. But okay, let's pause. Where do you want to go next? What? Mm. How do you want to spend the rest of the time? Or what do you need right now?
Mm.
So really respecting that person's sovereignty over themselves.
Mm-hmm. Mm, thank you. I need a few seconds of silence after that.
Mm.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. So Lily, let's go. After so many interesting topics we've talked about, let's go to the real thing.
Which is the real thing?
It's coming.
Oh, I'm curious now.
That famous phrase of yours that you have engraved in your t-shirt today.
Oh, please show that one. That
one. It depends. And there's Lily telling us that.
There's a joke around this.
Those are your robes. I'm with my robes here. There you brought your pink
robe. This is my pink robe. As you can tell, pink is one of my favorite colors.
Yeah. So if there is one, I mean, there's lots of things that have stayed with all of us in our cohort, but if there's one single one-liner that stayed, it depends. So I really appreciate it. Again, like the anything else, it sounds simple. It sounds like not extraordinary, but I'm getting more and more inclined, biased in the good sense of the term, to resort to that question because most of the questions many times depend on that, acknowledging the uniqueness, context, diversity. And so what wisdom lives in that ambiguity for you to say it depends?
I think it's about bracing non-duality.
Mm.
In a world that is becoming increasingly polarized.
Mm. 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 Beautiful. Non-duality. I love that word, of course. In our tradition, that's so important. For us, reality is described as non-dual consciousness. So when we relate to reality as unconscious and dualistic, fragmented, fractured, means we are not dealing with reality at all. We are living some impossible life, some illusion, right? And again, I always like to recall the one of our main texts, the Bhagavad Gita, 700 verses. And the first verse sets the whole problem, so to say, which is a battlefield, two armies, and one person thinking, what did my people and the rest did in the battlefield? So on one side of the battlefield are the sons of one person, and the other side of the battlefield are the sons of the brother of that person, and that brother died. So that person ideally should take those sons as adopting them as his own children, but still the person is thinking about my people on one side and the others on the other side, which basically symbolizes us and them, polarizing mentality. So that's the first verse of the Gita setting, okay, this is the mess in the world here. We are thinking in these terms. And then every chapter of the Gita concludes with the word yoga, which means union or communion or reunion. So first verse one, division, polarizing, dualism, fragmentation, the rest of the verse trying to bring reconciliation and union.
Beautiful. So,
beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah, so, this has become a bit of a running joke. I always the first time I say it in a course, I'm watching people's reaction, and it's like there's a bit of confusion, and I wonder if people find it's a bit dismissive, but really it's the crux of
Yeah.
As you said, the context, and in the core competencies themselves, there is something that says really appreciating, celebrating, acknowledging the context of the person that you're coaching.
Yeah.
That is one of the ways of knowing that you are adding a lot of value to the person, because everybody's different. We got a lot of similarities, but there's a piece where I think the coaching lives is in where I get very offended when people make an assumption that they think they know who I am just by how I look, or because of the color of my hair, or because, you know, my education, or because whatever. It's like, no, you really don't know me. And I don't think you ever will.
Yeah, that's why you wear that t-shirt, right? When people is projecting assumptions on you, they will read, it depends.
I've only worn this t-shirt back twice. So in one of the other cohorts, there was a fellow that was, every time he asked a question, he goes, oh, it depends. Like similar to you and Michael and some of the others in your cohort. You know the answer as soon as you say the question out loud.
Yeah.
And so somebody said, oh, you know, we need t-shirts with it. So I bought this t-shirt, and I wore it to the, we have an annual gathering of our coaches just to get together in person and learn something together, and where there are these pockets of coaches that graduate from our program. We had one in Vancouver, and I walked in with this t-shirt on.
Which was their reaction, please? A few words on that.
It's hilarious. It was hilarious. And so then I did it again this year. But I don't wear it. I just wore it special for you. Thank you. I don't want to walk around with my face on my t-shirt. Think about it. That's terrible. It's hard enough for me to take a picture of myself and then to put it on a t-shirt. It's only for our annual gatherings.
Thank you for giving us that privilege. And
it's just fun.
But yeah, I really appreciate the it depends, because it's so true. It seems simplistic or reductionistic, but actually it's, as you say, it's honoring the uniqueness of the other person and honoring the uniqueness of everything. And I need to take time to figure out what's the uniqueness of every situation. So I cannot give any one size fits all answer to anything, basically. I cannot become absolutistic. It will be impersonal. In my own language, I'd like to speak about personalism, like being personal, which every person, every situation. I have a book called Radical Personalism, which basically means personalism to the root. Radical means something to the marrow, so to say. So it depends for me is an acknowledgement of the uniqueness of everything and honoring that. And I find myself more and more replying, starting my replies with it depends. Maybe it's it depends, and then comes a question, not an answer even. So that's a good formula.
No, it's beautiful because it's like, that is, like you said, honoring the person is it depends. Yeah. It's like, there is not a cookie cutter approach, especially with coaching. Like, if you want a cookie cutter approach, I don't know if you're going to be that successful, because you really need to honor the context. And so, as you know, in the program, we really want people to figure out who you are as a coach, what's your signature as a coach, and then who's that person that's sitting in front of you or beside you. And the answer, and if you're not sure, we say ask the person. Right? So, you know, where do you want to go with this? What's important to you in all of this? What's the context that you need to pay attention in all of this? Like, just hand it back to the client, because they know best.
And when you say this, figuring out that the question who you are as a coach, also there was this important point that how you coach is who you are, or who you are is how you coach. At least for me, that was the experience. It's inseparable. Replying who am I as a coach is another way of replying to the question who I am, right? Yeah. For me, I'm speaking for me, right? Like that was a constant experience for me. The whole coaching journey is basically parallel to life journey. I don't see myself, okay, here it's me. And now I put the coaching mask, so to say, I enter the coaching persona, and then it's me. It's like very interesting how the two dance together, so to say. Yeah. Again, at least my experience. I don't want to impose that on everyone else.
No, but you remember we started off with an exercise of dimensions of identity. Who are you in all of this? Like, what are your values? You know, what's your cultural background, your religious background, your socioeconomic status, the countries that you lived in, the influences in your life, your ancestors. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of an inventory without having to share anything with anyone. Mm-hmm. But just kind of figure out who are you in all of this and what parts of these will you be. I look at it like an amoeba where everything is contained and the walls are quite porous and then it shifts around. So parts of these identity come up more prominent when I'm in grandmother role. Mm-hmm. And then parts of the come up when I'm in coach role or instructor role, yeah, or presenting at a conference or playing a board game. Like, you don't lose your identity, your pieces, yeah, of your identity, but some will show up a little more than others at given times of your life. And so that exercise threads throughout the program, as you remember, is mm-hmm. every once in a while we'll go, who are you in all of this? What parts, yeah, of your identity are coming up? You know, what's your brand out there? If I think of you as, you know, and I'm thinking about, oh, this client might be a really good fit for Swami, what would be the pieces that I think about? Mm-hmm. We mm-hmm. all have a reputation or brand, whatever you want to call it, presence. Mm-hmm. Like, and how do you want to be in the world? Well, walking mm-hmm. through the world as a coach and as a human being. Because as you said, I don't think you can separate them.
Mm-hmm. So Lily, do you see coaching as a spiritual practice, or at least a practice that can be spiritualized, in your opinion? Like, for example, I don't know, what happens when presence, listening, curiosity become sacred acts? Like, at least it has happened to me, but I'm curious about your thoughts.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So I don't belong to a religion, like mm-hmm. an organized religion. Mm-hmm. I do follow a lot of the Buddhist ways of being.
Okay.
But I would not call myself a Buddhist.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that coaching and coaching supervision can be a spiritual practice.
Hmm.
It feels very sacred to be with somebody who will tell you their life story hmm. and will share things with you that they do not share with anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And I really feel I need to honor that, because it is a gift. It is a... it is an honor to be able to be with somebody this way.
Hmm.
And so to me, it's very much, how do I honor that space
mm-hmm.
that I feel very privileged to be a part of? And I mm-hmm. came into coaching sort of midlife.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always thought, wouldn't it be nice if everyone in the world, if they wanted to access coaching, they were able to access coaching? Because often coaching is for the elite, the people that can afford the money. For a long time, it was for the executives and organizations only, where part of their incentive package was $50,000 worth of coaching a year. Can you imagine? And so part of my way of being in the world and part of my spiritual practice is, how do I bring this to people that want it, can benefit from it, whether mm-hmm. as a coach or as a coaching client?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, there's something very spiritual about it for me.
Mm.
And really honoring this practice and honoring this way of being in the world. And so a big part of my work is give back.
Mm-hmm.
I do quite a bit of pro bono, and anybody that wants to talk with me, basically, I will talk with them. I never say no to a conversation around coaching mm-hmm. and thoughts. It feels aligned with who I want to be in the world.
Mm. Yeah. And sorry to embarrass you live now, but I must give personal testimony that that's who you are. You're walking your talk with lots of integrity and dignity and honesty and ethics. So I really appreciate your willingness to share this gift and to make that as available as possible. So Yeah.
Thank you for that.
But yeah, I'm thinking about, yeah, coaching involves, like, again, attunement and silence and intuition, which many times I think often associated with contemplative traditions, so to say, right? So it's so natural to relate to this more contemplative dimension of coaching. Again, for me, at least, that I'm coming from a contemplative path, that's why I think, I never left my who I am and my practice. It's just another perspective of my way of addressing life, reality, relationships. But at the same time, a new light shed on that. So
yeah. I remember my first conversation with you, and I felt this is very aligned to who you are. It's not that you have to learn it from the beginning. It's maybe a few tweaks. It's maybe a little bit of unlearning and learning. And wow, you have a constituency that I think about the ripple effects and how we as coaches, how we as people touch others, and how many people we touch, and what's that reverberation that happens in the world, and the vibration that happens as a result of us holding this kind of sacred space for people.
Yeah, butterfly effect, as they call it sometimes as well, right?
Yeah.
I really have trust in that, and have even witnessed that in certain ways by, again, not to talk about me, but it's who I am. I cannot talk about someone else, but meeting people who have met some other people who have met some other people who have met me, and somehow, and again, it's not about me. I'm just an example, but it can be you or anyone. But if they felt that they received something substantial, that's passed on to other and to other and to other, and you can see a chain of transformed lives. Again, not because of me or you, but just of trying to be instruments of...
Think of you and me.
Sorry?
Think of you and me. What are the odds and the combinations and permutations that brought us together? Would our paths ever have crossed if I wasn't a coach and you didn't become interested in coaching?
Yeah.
I don't know, right? And it's something about the energy, and something about the law of attraction, and something about how we're being in the world and who we're attracting into our space.
Yeah, totally agree.
How did that cohort come together? 12 people, beautiful people that all learned together and became so bonded and so much fun. And okay, don't tell them they were fun. Right? It's like, what did it take for somebody to come from living in Sweden, and somebody from Spain, and somebody from...
Connecting at the time zone that they were connecting, midnight, more than that, doing that sacrifice. Oh, my God.
It was crazy. And I always think about that. I think about, how do these people come into my orbit? There is something spiritual and something sacred and something mystical, I would say, even about it.
Yeah. Why not? Yeah. So Lily, as we are wrapping up, what one question that comes to my mind, what will shift, in your opinion, in our homes, in our workplaces, in our institutions, if in our lives, if more people practiced coaching presence, even outside formal sessions, but take the essence of that as a way of life, so to say?
Yeah, thanks for that, because there's this continuum that I see in my mind, where at one end, it's the professional coaching, the thing that you just learned, and it's formalized. And these are all social constructs, of course, right? And then at the other end is a very directive kind of coaching, like in soccer or any sports coaching. And then somewhere in the middle, I call it, you're taking a coaching approach to life. So you don't have to be a formal, fully educated professional coach. And you can use some of these skills in your life, as you noted in, or as we noted in our class. Some folks are using it with their children, right? And they're seeing results. Yep. Or with the people that are reporting through to them, or even their friends, instead of just trying to tell them what to do. They're holding the space and asking them questions without putting in a formal coaching session and being that professional coach. So I see beautiful possibilities, and I'm not naive to think that this is the answer to everything. And if many of us, and then, and you know, I think people think tipping point is 17%. So if 17% of the world walked around using a coaching approach, that would be a tipping point to, I think, really supporting others and thinking for themselves and empowering and in empowering and empowering themselves and taking more sovereignty over their choices and what they want to do with their life. And that holds possibilities for me. I'm what they call a seven in an Enneagram, which is chasing shiny objects and having these big lofty goals and ideas and aspirations. And so that's what I hold is.
By the way, what number are you in the Enneagram, Lily?
Seven.
Oh, you're a seven. Okay.
Yes. Can't you tell?
No, I was curious.
I'm going all over the place.
I didn't want to tell myself which number you were, trying to be a good coach boy. So I'm asking you. Okay. I'm a nine, so we are relatively nearby.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for that answer. And we allow me to conclude. I generally close for the last episodes. I've been closing my episodes asking a few spicy short questions, Lily.
You are good for that.
As a seven, you will be good for this.
Go for it.
So the premise is short questions, honest answers, no overthinking, just your gut truth. And you are so good for that. So you won't have any problem with that.
I don't know. That's a projection or an assumption.
Sorry. Thank you, teacher. But just in case, fasten your seatbelt over there. So question number one, what's the biggest misconception people have about coaching?
That we're telling people what to do.
Number two, what's one misconception coaches often have about themselves?
About themselves?
Yeah.
That they're good at telling people what to do.
Good. Number three, what's that question that has for you unlocked the most insight?
Who are you to hide from people that are looking to work with you?
Number four, which is a sign that someone is giving advice without realizing it?
What is a sign?
Yeah, like a coach. What's a sign from someone coaching that someone is actually giving advice to the person without realizing that he's doing that?
Sometimes a look on the client's face. But I have this temptation to say it depends.
Please, no problem. What's, if you feel very free to share, a moment you truly failed as a coach and what you learned from that?
Oh,
sorry.
I made a big assumption. I saw something and I made a statement and it was totally wrong.
So what do you learn from that?
To hold off on assumptions and check, is this an assumption? Or is this, so I was listening to Barack Obama the other day in one of his podcasts, and he said something that I thought was quite profound. He said, we need to have a diversity of opinions, but we should not have a diversity of data.
Mm-hmm.
So separate data from opinions.
Good. Thank you. Number six, which is a sentence that as a coach, you think always bring a client to silence. The sentence could be, in this case, a question.
There's so many, but one I really like is, how are you experiencing what you just said? So it's an invitation for the client to go into their body and experience what they just said, especially when it's a profound, something that feels profound to them.
Okay, this may sound easy, but I will put some conditions here. What phrase do you say most often in sessions besides "it depends"? Sorry. A little conditional, a little bit.
Where do you want to go next in this conversation?
Which is the most underrated coaching skill, in your opinion?
Silence.
And what's What's one piece of advice you always want to give, but coaching has taught you to hold back?
Advice. You can do this.
Mm-hmm.
Just do it.
Mm-hmm. The last one. What's coaching in one word?
Love.
So Lily, if someone, just to conclude listening today, is curious, not just about learning more about coaching, which by the way, I will share the link here before we conclude. For those who would like to learn more, here's the link to their coaching project, which is 8thElementCoaching.com. For those who are only listening, it's the number 8th. So we have 8th and then ElementCoaching.com. So for those who are, again, listening, are curious about learning more about coaching, becoming a better listener, better question asker, better human, what's a final whisper you would want to leave them with?
Get curious. And please, if you're at the least bit curious about coaching, reach out. There's no obligation, and we don't push anything on anybody. We don't do a sales job, because you also have to be the right person for the program too. So we want you to really decide, is this for you? Yeah, and thank you for sharing that. That's brilliant. I didn't think you were going to do that. I didn't expect that. That's a bonus.
Why not? How could I?
It's radical and it's free.
So many gifts I received from you and all the group. So yeah, the minimum I can do. And as we will conclude our coaching sessions, I'm asking you the same. And it's not that I'm coaching you now, Lily, but there's anything else you would like to share to feel complete today?
Just my gratitude. Gratitude to life in general that took me to this path. Gratitude for the cohorts. That's cohort. I want to keep saying cohort 5. Shout out to you. gratitude to you for coming into the conversation and into the space, and Michael for introducing you, and just gratitude for my life and where I am at and how I get to be in this world. I just wake up feeling very grateful. So thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Lily, for accepting the invitation. We are the grateful ones today. Thank you.
Thank you so much.